You are listening to 91.9 KPTZ, Port Townsend. This is Marsha Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer. You are about to hear one of three special film festival interviews, true previews of coming attractions. Jeanette Force, our intrepid executive director of the Port Townsend Film Institute, has added the first Port Townsend Women and Film Festival to our annual roster. On March 28th and 29th, we get to combat the winter blues, head for the Rosebud and Rose Theaters to view 9 feature films and 3 shorts, which prominently highlight women directors, producers, writers, and actors. Jane Julian, our talented film procurer, has been trotting around the country discovering these gems. And today I have a wonderful person. I know she's wonderful because I adored her film, Jules Hart. Welcome, Jules.
Oh, thanks, Marsha. I'm so happy to be here.
And Jules has brought us Pink Smoke Over the Vatican. It has garnered a lot of attention and a lot of wonderful support and critical acclaim. It's a documentary film about the controversial movement of women seeking ordination in the Roman Catholic Church. More and more women are answering a spiritual calling to take on the vestments of priesthood and seek equality in the religion they love. These daring women have risked banishment, loss of livelihood, and even excommunication to take part in what the church calls illicit ordinations. And without continuing to introduce the film, I'd rather just have the conversation with Jules and it all come out, dear Port Townsend listener. So, Jules, what got you interested in this topic in the first place and specifically in this film?
Well, I have to be honest, I really had no interest in the Roman Catholic Church more than just a passing interest, like a non-Catholic. I hadn't really given it much thought, but I am a feminist, and I am very interested in women's empowerment and women's spirituality. So there was an article about me in a local paper, the Monterey Herald, and it said what my interests were. And I got a call from a woman named Dana Reynolds, who ended up being in the film and actually was the first woman American bishop ever ordained. So we followed her story, and she asked me, would you be interested in telling my story? I'm going to be ordained a deacon in the Roman Catholic Church illicitly. And I thought, oh, God. I mean, not really. And so she said, well, why don't we meet? And I think you'll change your mind. So, and that's exactly what happened. After I met her and some of the other incredibly brave women, I realized that this may actually be one of the most important stories I ever told.
You know, it tickled me in very much the same way. I'm a feminist. I'm a psychotherapist that has dealt with a lot of recovering Catholics over the years. But this is so much larger than Catholicism, although Catholicism does figure in, because some of the points being made during the course of the film were, by keeping women out, it's not as kind and gentle a place for children. And all the stuff with abuse and everything, the countervailing force would be if it more mirrored, quote-unquote, normal society, the church, and if it weren't quite so rigid, and it allowed for equality, essentially. So once you started getting interested, how did you select who you were going to speak with? Because you have such a wonderful range of people, including men, dear listener, because there are male feminists out there. It takes great courage for them to come out in support of women. So how did you gather your cast?
Well, I have to say, as you probably can understand doing interviews, it was one person led me to the next and led me to the next. And I definitely went to as many ordinations as I could. And so when I'd go to the ordination, I'd meet more people. And I was thrilled in the beginning to get Don Cordero, who was a former Jesuit priest who had left to marry. So I got to follow him around and then met his wife, who eventually became a priest. And, oh, and I have to keep saying illicitly because people then call in and say, I didn't know this was happening. Well, it is happening. It's just not, condoned by the church. But, and then, of course, I went to the ordination of Janice Sever-Dushenska in Kentucky, and that's when Father Roy Bourgeois gave his famous homily that he was eventually excommunicated for. So we went to Georgia and interviewed him, and that I really felt cemented the picture of the very courageous male priests who've given up everything for supporting women.
What's interesting to me is the range of people, some who have left the church over this issue, but many who want to be able to continue loving the church because they came for a reason, their spiritual connection is still strong, but they still want there to be parity and fairness. So you really did get a range of people there. And you're also singing my song, Illicit and Feminist, you're singing my song. And give the listening audience a feel for what these ordinations are like.
Well, in the beginning, the first few ordinations were held on ships, which was fascinating to me. And there were many reasons. There were symbolic reasons, and then there were also logistic reasons, like you can keep people off ships. And the original ordination in, I wasn't there, unfortunately. I didn't come on board until 2004, and the first women were ordained in 2002, and that was in Germany. And there's all these stories about the church, the official church, trying to stop these ordinations from happening. It's like cloak and dagger stuff, like they tried to rent the boat out from under the women, trying to pay more money so they didn't have a place to do it. They actually locked one of the ordaining bishops who they found out who was going to participate and locked him in his room.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
I mean, it was kind of hilarious. But once you got on the ship, there was a feeling of incredible celebration. It was so emotional. I mean, I was filming it and I was weeping. I mean, these women who have been called since childhood, who are getting to stand up and take the holy orders. I mean, you can't even imagine how much joy there is. And they do the same ritual as the men, and a lot of feminists don't think that you need to follow these rules, that you should reinvent them. But these are very, you would say conservative, except that they want to be priests. Women, and they really want the holy orders in the same way that the men have them. They've had the same education as men. They've gone to seminary, and then they watch their fellow students go on to be ordained while they have to work for the church. You know, so it's incredibly moving.
Are they in touch with each other? Is there a sort of a group kind of email thing or a way in which they bolster each other from various parts of the country and the world?
Absolutely. There are several groups of women, and the biggest one is the Roman Catholic Women Priests. And then since their inception, there's a split off of that, which is the Association of Roman Catholic Women Priests. And that split came because the association decided they were more activist priests, and the Roman Catholic women priests wanted to stay and more like do pastoral things. So they kind of split and ideologically a bit. And then, of course, there's one in Europe, but they're all kind of connected.
Yeah, I was struck in watching the film, by the way, besides the gorgeous cinematography and really close-ups to their faces so that you could really see and feel and hear the emotion. I was also struck by the fact that, for the most part, they are conservative in every way. They are Catholics in every way. They're very spiritual. But in this small area, which is a large area, they're having the courage to speak out. What percentage would you say of the women who speak out remain in the church? Because I get the feeling it's a high percentage.
Well, yes, they do stay until they become excommunicated. And it's a very sticky, it's a slippery slope, because if they speak out and they are in a conservative diocese, they can no longer receive communion or do any more work in the church. And another one of the women I interviewed really sobbed in the interview. I didn't get into the film, but because she wouldn't be able to be buried in a Catholic cemetery. I mean, they're really, really giving up a lot. That's their family. That's their community. And a lot of people are angry with them for, you know, why can't you just, you say you love God, you know, these are his rules. Why can't you obey them, you know? They've done a lot of discernment, all of them, and they're all very educated. Most of them have PhDs. It's not like they don't know the rules of the church, if you know what I'm saying. So I would say if they can remain in their parish, they will, but most of them have been shunned and forced out.
You're listening to 91.9 FM, KPTZ, Port Townsend. I'm interviewing Jules Hart, the director of Pink Smoke Over the Vatican, for our first Women in Film Festival, which will be occurring on Saturday and Sunday, March 28th and 29th at the Rose and Rosebud Theaters. Hello again, Jules. So now I'm going to move the prism a little. We've talked a good deal about the content of the film. Since it is a Women in Film Festival and we're interviewing directors, tell us a little bit about your trajectory. When did you get interested in film? What else have you done? You've called yourself a feminist. Let's hear how.
Well, it's very interesting because I started out as a model, which is very, one would think, anti-feminist. And I knew what it was like to be objectified, and I knew what it was like to not have anyone care what I had to say. And I learned what it was like to be put into a very small pigeonhole. This is what you should be like. This is what you should. And it was very, very stifling, and it was also terrifying because every day the clock was ticking, you were getting older, you know, and that's a huge component in that industry is youth. As much as it was financially maybe fulfilling, it was soul-crushing to a great degree, and I ended up going to UCLA in my mid-30s, trying to find myself. I actually wanted to be a therapist, speaking to you. I thought that might be something I'd like to work with women. So when I went to UCLA, one of the very first classes that caught my eye was a class given by Miriam Robbins Dexter called The Roots of Patriarchy. And I thought, that sounds interesting. And that class changed my life. And I have to say, I was so inspired by this professor, and I didn't know how to get close to her or how I could possibly, you know, be of service to her. So I went to her office hours and I just said, I don't know, but I feel like I need to know you. And I don't know, do you need someone to take your dry cleaning? You know, that I just knew. It's sort of like that idea of mentor. You know, you can't say I'm going to mentor you. The mentee has to come to you and say, you have something I want. And that's what I did, but I didn't know what it was. And she made me her research assistant. And so that's how I got really educated and involved in women's studies and feminist spirituality. And let's just say my consciousness was raised.
I love that younger women are picking up the banner, because I think so many people misunderstand feminism, and younger people in many instances don't want to be painted with that brush. So for you to have fought to get a wonderful mentor and really got it from the beginning was the start of your new career, I imagine.
It absolutely was. And I have met those women because I'm a guest lecturer and I go to universities now and talk, you know, about women in film and different aspects, women artists. And I do get the occasional one who say, I hate feminists like you. And, you know, you're like, oh, okay. And they say, you won't let me get married. You won't let me have children. You won't let me this and that. And Yeah, as a joke, I say, you're right. If you want to get married and have kids, get out of that chair, you know. Another woman would be happy to sit there and get educated. And I don't really mean it, but it starts the dialogue back and forth about what is it to be a feminist. There are no rules, you know. But anyway, I do laugh about what you say about the younger women sometimes not getting it and not wanting to be called feminist.
Yes, because they want to show that they dig testosterone. And we feminists, some of our best friends are men. It's all okay. I think the central issue is choice. And choose any way you want, but don't stop anybody else. So tell me a little bit more about what else you're doing and have done besides Pink Smoke over the Vatican. This weekend, March 28th and 29th, we just really want to see the whole array of women's choices in film and the kinds of things that you're all doing. So let us know, Jules, now about you.
Well, what I'm doing now, unfortunately, I have broken even, but I haven't really been able to earn a lot of money off the film because I didn't get any distribution. So, and it's been fabulous to be your own producer and director and make the film you want to make. It's really empowering and wonderful. But filmmaking is very expensive. So I don't have the resources to, there's a lot of stories I'd like to tell, but I don't have the resources. So I've decided to write a screenplay and I'm going to try and move into the more of the narrative film. Of course, my themes will live on. My story is definitely about women and I'd like to either direct it myself or hire an amazing woman director. So,
have you taken this to other women's film festivals?
No, it's really brand new, and I'm a little shy with it because it's a new arena for me, but I'm very excited. It's a new way to have a voice, and I think that's what you're kind of talking about this festival. It's a way to give underrepresented people a voice. And here, the voice I gave to those women made me so proud. And the other thing about Pink Smoke over the Vatican, I got to meet real heroes, and that is something very rare. It's rare to meet people who give up everything for what they believe in, and I was quite honored. So I'm hoping that in my new incarnation, I will be able to bring that kind of voice to women.
Well, I do know anybody who makes decisions about what films should be in what festivals, if they get to see this, this will be anywhere it needs to be. And as wide a distribution as possible is in everybody's interests. Because, I mean, if we're ever going to do anything about this, this Pope is the guy who we need to turn a bit. And who knows? It's not for me to say. I'd love to see this keep on moving and keep on affecting the people in power and the people that can really make the decisions. So we're getting ready to wrap up. Jules, is there anything the people in Port Townsend need to hear before meeting you in person about you, the film?
Just that I'm impassioned about my subject matter, and I really look forward to being there and to, you know, have a discussion. That's all but I hope for a lot more. But one of the things I hope for is to open up a discussion about this subject. And I have to say, the people I've met along the way, they come up to me and say, you should make a movie about Buddhist nuns. You should make a movie about the Mormons. You should make a movie. You know, so it's sort of universal. It's not just about the Catholic Church.
And I do think you'll probably, in your next subject matter, move off spirituality and religion, because it's nice to kind of cut a wide swath, I imagine.
Yes.
But I do understand why everybody wants you to handle their religion. I wouldn't mind you showing what the Jews are up to, but that's not for me to say. So, Jules, we're getting ready to wrap up. What would be important to tell the people of Port Townsend before they get the opportunity to meet you at the first Women in Film Festival, March 28th and 29th at the Rose and Rosebud Theaters? What more needs to be said about feminism in film?
I think it's very important for women to have a voice. So it's very exciting to be coming to a Women in Film Festival. I love to meet other filmmakers. I love to meet women that are empowering themselves and who are excited about women's potential. That is very exciting to me. And I'm thrilled to come and just feel that energy. I know that sounds very California, but I'm from California.
So the other thing I wanted to note is, did you notice that at the Academy Awards, the subject of pay parity for women came up? One of the people receiving an award, and I can't remember who, did say that that's an issue that really needs to be addressed.
Yes, Patricia Arquette. Yeah, she won for Best Supporting Actor.
So the idea of giving women some power, or not giving, taking our power, one of the women in the film talked about the hunger for the feminine in the church. I think that that's a recurring theme. And can you say a little bit about the ways in which that comes up for a number of people?
Oh, there's so many ways that that is needed in the church. Imagine, well, we all can because it's our existence, a religion where it's all men. You only see men at the altar. You have to image Christ by actually being a physical male. That's one of the main things that they say about priesthood. You have to image Christ. And so these women, they feel less than. They grew up not even being able to touch anything in the altar because they are not clean. They grew up with little boys saying, well, God's a boy, you're a girl, you're less than, you know. So this kind of, you cannot be something until you can imagine it. I did a film about a woman drummer named Lane Redmond, and she told me that the first time she saw a woman playing the drum set was Karen Carpenter, I think on the Ed Sullivan Show. She had never seen a woman play the drums before, and she had always wanted to play the drums, but they told her, no, that's for boys. You should play the flute. You know, you should play the violin, or you should play the oboe. They would not let her get a drum set. She saw Karen Carpenter, and that changed her life. So I think until you can see something, you can't imagine yourself being it, especially in a religion that appears from women's perspective to disempower them.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was on the Commission on Status of Women in Alameda County, California, a number of years ago, and we had a huge conference for high school girls that wanted to be in those days, in non-traditional careers. I mean, in those days, there weren't very many doctors, lawyers, contractors, electricians, all of that. And we wrote a song to kick that off called Believing is the Beginning of Doing. And so in any area of feminism that you want to wipe with the feminist brush, it really does start with getting everybody to see, and especially women to see, about women's empowerment and what's possible if they have the courage and if they have the belief. And the thing that your film does so well is it also shows not just the courage and belief, but the camaraderie and the ways in which people bolster each other up and give each other the courage to continue. So once again, I want to thank Jules Hart, director, producer of Pink Smoke Over the Vatican. She'll be with us for our Women in Film Festival the end of March. Thank you again, Jules.
My pleasure.
Jacob Brown, our engineer. Nora Petrich, our station manager. Larry Stein, our program director. And Mike Schlexer, our director of production. Once again, you are listening to this special edition of Women in Film Interviews for the end of the month of March, 28th and 29th. Go gently. If you can't go gently, go as gently as you can.